Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Village Farms International announces third quarter 2016 results. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Monday, November 21st, 2016. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Stephen Ruffini, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Before we get started, I'm going to read our forward-looking statement. At the onset of today's call, the company notes that our discussion today may contain certain statements that include forward-looking information. Accordingly, we refer you to the company's most recently filed MD&A under the heading Forward-Looking Statements, which, amongst other things, identifies material factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from any forward-looking information. Moreover, any forward-looking information may be based upon certain material factors or assumptions. Please refer to the company's most recently filed MD&A under the heading Forward-Looking Statements for further details. With that stated, want to get into the third quarter. We continued our double-digit sales growth in the third quarter with a $4.2 million increase in sales to $42 million from $37.8 million, or an 11% increase for the quarter. For the 9 months, our sales increased to $11.4 million, or 11%, to $118.2 million from $106.8 million for the same period in 2015. The increase, as we've said in our press release and MD&A, the increase is due to the addition of a new supply partner. That capacity primarily came from one grower in the Leamington area. It is the first time a non-Leamington marketing company is marketed for a Leamington grower. The addition of the new 65 acres of capacity has been challenging over the last two quarters. Just as a refresher, of the 65 acres, 15 acres of the 65 acres consist of winter production. That's a lit glass facility. We brought that on November 1st of last year executed quite well in the fourth quarter and the first quarter with an incremental 15 acres. The ramp up of the incremental increase of 50 acres that came of that volume, which came on all at once on April 1st, was a substantial year-on-year increase in supply. When we brought on incremental market share in the Northeast, it was challenging, as when we selected the crop mix for this acre, we do that a year in advance. We obviously, while we sold in that market before the Northeast, retailers have changed, varieties have changed, so on and so forth. So the crop mix that we selected for that 50 acres was not optimal. As we brought on those retailers, we fully expect and are confident that the new crop mix that we've selected this fall for that 50-acre production, which will begin next April, will be optimized and much better match the demand profiles for our new market share in that market. As a result of the new supply partner challenges, our cost of sales for the 9 month ended increased $10.6 million or 11%, which was in line with our 11% increase in sales. While it's not evident in our published financials for commercial reasons, our own cost of sales decreased 4% year to date for the 9 months ended due to lower cost per pound in 2016 versus 15, based on lower cost, particularly with our specialties, as we have enhanced our cost management of those and actually increased our yields on the specialties. For the 6 months ended June 30th, our own cost of production were actually running 10% ahead of prior year. Obviously 4% less than 10%. So unfortunately, during the quarter, we did have issues primarily at our Canadian facilities with some crop issues over the summer. So our actual total crop volumes were lower than anticipated. And as such, we had to increase our cost per pound charge over the quarter such that there was roughly an incremental $2 million charge to our cost of sales during the course of the quarter. So while we are still ahead of prior year, cost per pound is not as favorable on September 30th as it was on June 30th. Our SG&A expenses year-to-date were up $1.2 million to $9.8 million from $8.6 million due to increases in our sales and marketing areas due to the new grower supply. Overall, SG&A to revenue percentage was 8.3% for the 9 months ended June 30, 2016 versus 8.1% for the 9 months ended June 30, 2015. Our change in bioasset for the 3 months ended September 30, 2016 at $420,000 is in line with the prior year change in bioasset for the 3 months ended June 30, 2015 of $511,000. What that tells the readers that the VF facility gross margins for the first 6 weeks of Q4 16 are very close to the gross margin for the first weeks of fourth quarter of 2015. Our Q3 EBITDA of $547,000 was below the prior year EBITDA figure of $1.8 million, primarily as a result of the incremental cost of sales charges previously mentioned and continued pressure with respect to market pricing through much of the quarter. For the 9 months ended, our EBITDA was $5.9 million versus the 9 month 2015 figure of $6.2 million. The lower figure is solely pertains to our lower performance with respect to our supply partner volumes. As we move into 2017, we expect to see double-digit improvement in our bottom line on slightly higher sales volume based on a new crop mix at our Leamington supply partner and continued retail acceptance of our exclusive varieties. And with that, I will turn it over to Mike.
Good morning. Be brief, and then I'll have some Q&A. So just to reiterate, Steve, yeah, we did have challenges in the second, third quarter. Typically, when we have our own internal asset expansion, we wouldn't bring on 65 acres at one shot. We did have to retract some of our Northeast customer base after the hailstorm in 12, as we briefed earlier. So bringing some of those customers on, along with the new varieties, was a bit challenging with the summer production peaking. But we're confident now that we found a solid new customer base and existing penetration moving forward into 17, that being aligned with a more finite crop mix and the knowledge of the alternative partner grower who had not grown any of these varieties before and had underestimated its yield potential. So I think we're in a very solid position moving forward. This year is concluding with a record year for our Gates technology. I can say that it's solidly performing, and I do believe it is the best technology in the world today for growing year-round in extreme climates. I'm very confident of that. And we're now in a position that we are solidly looking at future developments in extreme locations to take our technology forward. This has been a 10-year project from when we started a pilot project in 2006 up through the commercial ramp-up in 2012. So that's a very positive thing for our value going forward. Exclusive varieties that we continue to focus on. We look at hundreds of new varieties each year, all exclusives that we're really focused on. And we're doing very well with the ones we've launched. Again, we're seeing continued expansion with new customers and existing customers for those items. We have some very promising varieties that we feel confident we'll be launching over the next 2 years. As mentioned previously, we're looking at alternative crops outside of the core vegetable markets, and there is ongoing and multiple discussions with multiple companies, both in the U.S. and Canada on that, and we hope to report something in FY17. So moving forward, our cost efficiencies, we keep hammering that down, and technology, both the growing Gates and the Gates technology and our CO2 and energy technology. We have some very promising technologies on the horizon for us. Continued evaluation of varieties, and now we're moving forward on looking at future developments with our Gates technology. That said, I'll take any questions you may have at this point.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a three-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Again, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Again, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. There are no questions at this time. Sorry, we do have a question. Your first question comes from Blake Pelham, Raymond James. Blake, please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on the seed issue that you alluded to for the Canadian operations, as to how that evolves, or you know what, how it comes about in the first place, kind of thing.
The issue that we are seeing and growers are seeing, quite frankly, not just in North America but all over the world, called crazy root. I don't think you've ever taken a greenhouse tour, but if you look at the root structure, it is exactly that. It's a root issue that essentially causes some nutritional issues in the plant, such that decreasing the volume. So we and other growers are trying to assess: is it a seed issue? Is it a propagator issue? And quite frankly, the jury's out. It has been a bit of a challenge with respect to our yields. We've seen issues like this in the past, and we've gotten through it. And you would hope with either new varieties and better focus both at the propagator and ourselves that we can mitigate this issue going forward.
Okay. Also, I noticed in your presentation that you talk about cannabis, and you said when it is federally legal, and then you've got another bullet underneath that says Canada in 2017. Can you speak to that a little bit as to potential opportunities and stumbling blocks, et cetera?
Well, I think we've made it clear that, if it's a legal crop and it's a lucrative crop, that we would take a hard look at it. So we are doing that. We have been doing that on an ongoing basis. We have a team working on it. The U.S. is obviously a very large market, but till it's federally legal, we're probably not going to jump into in the U.S., but we're working with a number of companies that are currently producing it for medicinal purposes and staying close to it. Canada's a different story because it is federally legal for medicinal purposes, and come this April, those laws will be ironed out by the Canadian government, so we've taken a viewpoint of focusing there. And I think one of the reasons we are and working with others is I believe that there will be a migration of the existing facilities that have started growing indoors to greenhouses. It just makes all the sense, and we've seen some greenhouses now that actually have been designed from the ground up solely for cannabis and existing cannabis growers, not looking to reinvent the wheel to try to gain knowledge of growing in greenhouses and trying to ascertain technology from a zero starting point. So we are, active in Canada looking at opportunities currently. So, it's on the radar screen. It's part of our alternative crops that we talk about. Nothing happens quick or easy. There's a lot of unknowns in cannabis, even in Canada. And so we want to be, very clear. We don't want to make mistakes, and we want to choose the right parties. And it's the same on the berry side, too. We're going to go down the road. That's what we anticipate, too, more in a joint venture with knowledgeable berry growers, where we can bring our greenhouse technology to the party. They can bring bury technology and look at commencing testing going into 17 as well.
Okay. Thank you. Could you elaborate on some of the, I believe it is snack pack introductions that you've made outside of the normal grocery channels kind of thing?
Well, food service is clearly on the radar screen. The ready-to-eat pack, we launched that with Disney, as you know, this year. We had worked with Disney for a long time. It's sold every day in the Disney parks here in Orlando. We have people working on that relationship to expand much more to their hotels, commissaries, cruise ship lines. And so far, it's been well accepted. So our plan is to leverage that up to other higher end or snacking possibilities as a, you know, what that conduit may be. And in 17, looking to be much more focused on a food service direction. That'll involve different folks within our organization to do that. It's a different channel. But we wanted to take it slow with Disney. We felt if we can make it there, kind of, you know, that would be a great leverage point for other convenience stores and airlines, and there's a whole host of opportunity on a radar screen. It also involves, you know, washing the product, so we're doing that on a scale that is meeting demand now, and we're working some others to see how we can scale that up to a larger scenario because it does need to be washed and packed separately.
Okay. Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please proceed.
All right. Well, thank you for your interest in Village Farms, and we look forward to talking to you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines.